Good afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. With this episode recording here, we're recording episode 219, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. My next guest, or my guest today, is for episode 219, is the kind of builder who refuses to stay in one lane. He started in enterprise machine learning at IBM, won their Global Best of IBM award, moved to Toronto, and decided the e-commerce world was being held back by bad advertising automation. So he built AI Hello, a platform that now manages over $1 billion in annual revenue for more than 5,000 Amazon sellers, including brands like Bose, L'Oreal, etc. And just when you thought it was enough, he turned his eye onto something much bigger: the infrastructure problem at the core of AI itself, specifically why these systems hallucinate and how you build the foundation for artificial superintelligence. He is the founder of AI Hello and HAL0.AI. Welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat, Ganesh Krishnan. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
And with this introduction, I would love for you to give me your spin on your background. And we'll start with the easy question first, the story question. Could you tell the audience, if you don't mind, who you are, what's your story, what got you here? A bit of a background on you, if you don't mind.
Sure. My name is Ganesh. I've been in kind of the AI machine learning for maybe 10 to 15 years, slightly more than that. As you know, AI is pretty old, you know, like it's from the 70s, you know, the algorithms have been there for 70s. 15, 20 years ago, AI was much simple. You know, it was more statistics, machine learning, linear regression, a bit of neural networks, if you're fancy. And, you know, the concept of hallucination did not exist at the time because it was mostly mathematics and data and everything. And then I moved on to big data. I did a lot of big data analytics, eBay, IBM, and in Australia, some of the, you know, the big companies, the big data companies. The AI actually took over when LLM became popular. Before that, it was just the, you know, the tech people, the nerds that were interested into AI. So when LLM became, you know, a lot of popular, it brought its own set of problems, which is a hallucination. You give it data and it conjures up its own data. We never had this before because it was all mathematics, it was all formulas. And LLM works on a text basis, it's natural language processing. So to reduce this hallucination is something that we started. And we've been on AI for close to 8 years. We've been using AI algorithms for 8 years. LLM is still not a good fit for e-commerce because we try LLM and it starts hallucinating the numbers. And with e-commerce, with money, you need to be correct down to the cents. You cannot, you know, make any kind of a mistakes. So what we did was we spun off a branch of the machine learning of AI into HAL0. And that's where we are right now. We invest a lot of money, resources, time into the research of reducing the hallucination.
Now, take me back a little bit, if you don't mind, and the audience is pretty much on board with this, is just to get a little bit of a bit more deeper into the background here, Ganesh. Back to IBM, I guess. You worked with IBM. You were running retail ML forecasting for one of the world's biggest tech companies. What was that made you think, oh, I'm going to leave all this behind me and build something for myself?
I didn't quit after IBM. So IBM pushed me into a different into eBay. So with IBM, we handled the retail business. IBM a long time ago used to sell retail PCs for the retailers, and they used a lot of machine learning to find out what is the best price to sell and should we put it on, you know, sale? Should we even buy new inventory? Because when you know the PC builders, they just don't build the PC out of thin air. They have to buy from the suppliers. And once you buy from the suppliers, it becomes a liability. What price should you sell it as? Do you want to break even? So there was a lot of machine learning involved. And this was probably 20 years ago. And then IBM shut down the retail business. They sold it off to Lenovo. They still have some main.
Oh, that's when they went to Lenovo, is that?
That's right. Yeah, they sold it off. At the time, I was handling the sales for the retail division. So building out the software, doing the ML, doing the machine learning.
What was the learning there?
It was amazing. We got a lot of help from IBM Research. They would give us the algorithm, what is the best way. They had their own set of algorithms. And I led the team to build up the software. They would call it as a liability management, but it was more of a machine learning to predict, you know, what price should a machine be sold in order to reduce the liability.
And you moved on from there and you built the first AI Hello version for fulfillment forecasting, and it didn't make it. A lot of the first version, at least, A lot of founders never recover from a shutdown like this. What did that failure teach you? And what made you say, okay, I'm going to do a second launch here? And it succeeded in the second launch. Just a spoiler alert for people.
I think the first round, why I failed was I depended on too many people.
Okay.
And I took the advice of too many people. And you have to remember, different people are at different level of life. And what they call a success or failure is a very different definition from what is a success and failure for you. That was an important point. So I talked to a lot of the investors from the Silicon Valley. And what is different from the Silicon Valley is that if you're not a $1 billion business, they're not interested in you. If you're a $10 million business, if you're a $100 million business, they're simply not interested in you. They'll reject you. And this, you know, applies even to big companies like YC or anyone like that. So I would speak to these investors and they'd be like, okay, this is a good business, but it's a failure because, and there are reasons for failure where, you know, like it won't be a $1 billion business, everything. And I took their, you know, insights to heart. And then now in retrospection, I realized that their idea of failure is very different from my idea of failure. You can always, you know, go into different areas. You could always go into, branch out into something else. So while fulfillment was a failure, it's not a complete failure. We'll revisit it later. It's in fact, it is much more profitable, much more steady, much more stable than our ads business. So we went back to the drawing board and realized, what is the first question that these people ask? It's like marketing. How do you do marketing? And then we start on the ads. Very easy to launch, very easy to get users, but also very easy to lose the users.
It's not a sticky solution then.
Definitely not.
And what would be the environment in terms of business environment for this? Is there a lot of competition, you mean, or why wasn't it sticky?
There is a lot of competition, but unfortunately, the main reason why it is not sticky is a lot of the sellers' business themselves shut down. And I always refer.
Oh, they go up and down, kind of thing.
They go up and down, and they lose. They go out of stock. Their business goes out of stock. They get suspended. A lot of the reasons. So apparently, there is a statistics that 90% of the sellers on Amazon, the new sellers, they fail, and that failure, you know, trickles down to us. We also had a huge amount of failure when there was the tariff situation in April last year. And a lot of the sellers panicked, you know, they shut it down and they never recovered after that.
But only in this, you know, that would only affect Canada, US border.
Majority of our users are in Canada and US. I think close to 75.
Oh, okay.
We have 30%, 40% in Europe. Majority are in the US and that's where it got affected.
Now, from your side, and I was impressed reading this, you hold a Stanford AI robotic certification and an MIT LOT cert. Certification on top of your CS background. How much does the academic grounding still show up in the way you build today?
It's different. What they taught at what we learned, you know, at these courses is more about hardcore technical. And once you realize that if you want to do a startup, you need to forget about the technical part and you need to solve problems. You need to ask the user, what is your problem? And whether you do it with Voodoo, whether you do it with machine learning, or whether you do it with a human behind the scenes, what matters is, are you able to solve this problem? If not, what you're being is being a entrepreneur. You're building out, you know, tech solutions, you're vibe coding, you're creating algorithms, but there's no one to, you know, to use it. But if you take the problem and you use your knowledge, you use your algorithms to solve that problem, then you're building something.
Now, I want to move to a segment here. I've dedicated 2-3 segments. So one of the segments here is that need to dig a little deeper into AI hello for a second here. Just for the audience, what AI hello is, so you'd know what we're talking about, what Ganesh and I were talking about. AI hello automates Amazon PPC, that's pay-per-click campaigns, using generative AI, handling bid management, keyword optimization, negative keyword removal, and campaign creations. So just so you get, for the audience, just so you get context of what this software or tool does. And apparently, obviously, the customers for this particular pay-per-click or for this particular software, the AI hello, is that the sellers on Amazon, they will be using the tools such as AI hello to advertise their product, their services, etc. So to push the product out. If you don't mind, Ganesh, and if I can ask you, can you explain the scale of the problem for someone outside of the e-commerce to understand that? Somebody in the e-commerce business, they probably understand it. They don't need to figure this out. But somebody from outside the business, perhaps they have no idea listening to this. Can we explain it to them in a way that you're currently managing like over $1 billion a year in ad spend? That's pretty significant. I mean, First, I'm glad you made the time to have this podcast. I don't know how you would have time to do podcasts.
Yeah.
What does bad PPC management mean, and what does it look like at scale in dollar terms?
Gotcha. A bit of a correction. That's $1 billion in total revenue that we manage. Ad spend would be 30% of it. So probably around we did around 190 mil in 2026, and that's actually. It is verified by Amazon, and Amazon keeps us track and they keep us accountable of how much spend we do. So we came around to 196 mil for the year 2025. Yeah, 2025, 2026 is now. So the total revenue that we manage is around bill. Coming back to your question, you know, I want to explain what.
Yeah, if you don't mind explaining it as, you know, how does this work?
Right. So this is a coffee. And there's a new user that comes onto Amazon and they're like, I want to sell coffee on Amazon. So they have a coffee. They have a, you know, a bag of coffee. They want to sell on Amazon. They want to advertise it, because without advertising, no one is going to notice that you have a product. So you put an advertise. So when you advertise, a couple of things, you know, you need to put the creatives, of course. But what keywords are you using to advertise? What keywords are you pushing? So it could be coffee. It could be organic coffee. It could be coffee beans. It could be amazing coffee. Make your morning fresh, whatever keywords it is. Once the keywords are ready, then you need to have a bid. What bid should I put? And most of the time is gut feeling. You know, like, I think I should put a high bid on coffee, $3 maybe. I think I should put even high on organic coffee, 3.5. Make your morning fresh should be $1 probably. It's all gut feeling. And people put those keywords. Amazon bids on this keyword against all the competitors. Your ad shows up. People click on your ad. People buy it. Happy scenario. What if your bid is too much? What if you're paying too much? What if you're paying too less? Then your ads won't be visible. You're paying too much. You're bleeding out money. How do you know? You go back. You look at the performance. You reduce the bid. You forgot a few keywords. What if there are other keywords that can be paid for it? It's a bit of a mess. So what we do is we say, give us your product. We'll find out what keywords to put. We'll tell you exactly what bid to put. And then we'll increase or decrease the bid depending on what your goals are. How much is your profit margin? So we handle those parts of it. If you have handled Google Ads, if you're sold on Shopify, if you're sold on, you know, Amazon, if you're sold on WooCommerce, it's a common recurring problem. How do you bring your product in front of customers?
Now, when you say, you know, you shocked me earlier when you said 90% of sellers fail on Amazon. Does what you just said earlier, like how you explain the PPC scenario, does that help in limiting the failures or no?
Definitely. Because most of the customers, what they do is they think of random keywords. They use probably some keyword research tools. It's still random. And they have some idea of a bid, recommended bid. And then it turns out to be like a casino. And I always make the same, you know, thing of a casino. You put your money in and you hope things work out. And most of the people lose. They lose to the house, and then they exit the game. So don't play it like a casino. You know, like, you need to have right down to the bid level, down to the cent level. You need to know what keywords to bid on, how much to bid on, and how to properly plan the launch of your product.
If you work directly with customers, what was the real before and after scenario?
It depends, actually. So different people have different before and after. Some people like supplements, like if you think of collagen supplements, they run on a 100% ad cost. So if they spend $100 on ads, they make $100 in revenue. It's cent to cent. Where they make money is in subscribe and save. They make money on remarketing. They make money in brand management. That's how they make money. It's a very tough competition. But if it's a profitable, like jewelry or any other stuff that is profitable, then people can put up it and they reach, they're right now at 50% ad cost or 60%. That means they spend $6 and they make $10. We eventually get it down so that they spend $3 and they make $10.
Now, because there's AI part of this, and I'm just trying to get into the discussion between the relationship between AI and human in this formula. The phrase humans should be human and work and AI should be do the automation keeps coming up. So humans should be human and AI should do some automation, I guess. So how you talk about AI, hello, in that's what I'm hearing you and that's what I read about you. So you, in the context of human does human work and AI does the automation piece. What does the boundary actually look like, if you don't mind, inside your product? Is there a boundary between where human involved and where AI takes over or automation takes over?
The boundary is always shifting. The boundary has been shifting, you know, since day one. And the big question is now, what if there is no boundary in the future? That's when you say that's artificial super intelligence. But right now there is a boundary, but the boundary is being pushed more and more and more. You know, I mean, a few years ago, we had one person handling three or four, you know, clients in the in the back end. And now we are one person handling 8 clients because, you know, this AI is pushing more and more of the limits and there's more and more automation being done. There is some still tiny aspects of it where, you know, you need a human involvement. But I'm hoping within the next 12 months to 14 months, the involvement of human is really minimal. Think of it like, you know, a Tesla autopilot.
Yeah.
You sit and you make sure that your hands are on top of it and you're observing it. The rest of it will be done, you know, on your own. That is our objective. That is where we want to reach. But to answer your question, the boundary is always moving and we are pushing the boundary more and more. And in fact, HAL Zero is an experiment to make sure that we reach that the boundary is almost close to 100% automation and almost close to 0% of human involvement.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you work in various countries around the world, specifically, I mean, the big two markets, I'm assuming for you, are United States and Canada. But is there, how do you handle this cross-global dynamics? How do you handle these PPC cross, let's say, Germany or any other country?
Yeah, AI definitely helps, but we have employees in 7 different countries and different time zones. So there's always someone picking up. We have someone in Europe that picks up. We have someone in Asia that picks up. We have someone in North America that picks up. So there's always a kind of, you know, an employee working round the clock that makes sure that, you know, if customers have any kind of queries, that is immediately picked up. But to come to the question of language barriers, Amazon itself provides a lot of APIs that you can translate the listing, translate the keywords. We have our own generative language that can translate the keywords. Language is, in fact, you know, as of now, the least of the worries. You know, maybe 5 years ago, it was a big issue, but now I think it's almost inconsequential. I mean, we used to have a translator on board. We used to have a retainer translator, but that boundary is completely gone. Now it's 100% AI. There is no human required over there.
And it's good enough. You're finding that the language is good enough. Nobody complained about quality or anything like this?
Nothing like that. It's been better than a human.
And so, I mean, I was just on a podcast earlier and I was just joking around and I said, the word on the street in Silicon Valley is the language problem has been solved. The only industry probably thinking that the language is still a problem, it hasn't been solved by technology, is the language industry for obvious reasons. Now, let's move on, if you don't mind, to HAL Zero. That's my next segment of the conversation.
Yeah.
And for the audience, HALZero.ai is the second company that Ganesh is focusing on or working on. And it specializes in zero hallucination training for machine learning models. So the objective is zero hallucination. That's the primary objective. The insight came from running AI, I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, and this is just based on my research, running AI at an e-commerce scale, hallucinating, and it was hallucinating about the seller's revenue numbers, ad stats, and it's not a UX problem. It was more of the model was not delivering what it's supposed to deliver. First, can we talk a little bit about HALZero.ai? What is it? And what's the positioning of this company?
When LLMs took off, we used a lot of LLMs internally, the generative thing, to create an audit, to find out what's wrong with campaign, to find out what's wrong with products. When we did a cross-check, we found out that even some of the best models like ChatGPT or, you know, Claude, they start hallucinating as the context increases. The more the context goes up, the more the hallucination. Beyond a reasonable context, you know, it absolutely hallucinates everything, right from the product to what is being sold, to the numbers, to everything. And then we came to the realization that this generation of LLMs, one is my personal opinion, that's not going to get us to ASI, it's going to be a different, you know, algorithm. Two is we cannot even use them in business critical situations like e-commerce or advertising. And what we decided to go was, we don't need to build a logic model, we don't need something that solves the human level problem. We just need something that can retrieve the data and then offer some kind of information based on the data, we hash it up. So we decided to go with HAL Zero, which takes the data, grounds your model on top of it. It's not a transformer, it's not an LLM. We build our own, you know, reinforcement learning model. We build on top of it. And then it's a generative model that sits on top of it that generates the text around it. So we have to completely revamp. We can't use transformer. We can't use, you know, the current LLMs around it because it needs a lot of context and it needs to make sure that the hallucination is zero. It has to be zero.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can't have 1% or 0.1%. If there's $100 becomes $1, that's catastrophic.
So is this working now?
We have actually, we need to do a test run of it. And the way we do a test run is by running an email service, an email, you know, I don't have a note taker over here, a note taker and an email service. So we're going to release that feature first, see if it is really working. And then we're going to do an internal testing with all of our accounts using that model. And then once it's done, you know, we'll go on to graduate it. But the first release of the model has already been done a couple of weeks. We're going to release it to the public as well. You know, you can test it out with an API call and check if it works or not within the next couple of weeks. And then hopefully, you know, HAL Zero before the end of 2026.
Before the end of 2026, you'd have it launched. For me, I guess, before we get into the actual solution, I just want to make sure that everybody understand the real cost here. When AI hallucinate in your world, you know, that's not a chatbot saying something weird, but an AI managing an ad account and managing dollars and cents, producing business intelligence. What actually happened to the seller if AI hallucinate? What's the consequences?
It depends on where it hallucinates. It's not something a risk we can even take. So we never, you know, even talk about it in the production. But imagine if a product spends $1,000 and it makes $4,000 in revenue, you have a 25% day cost. It comes back to you and say that instead of, you know, it's spending $1,000, it just spent $100. Then you will say, okay, the ad cost is really good. It's 2.5%. You can push more ad spend on it. And you push more ad spend on it, and it goes into a loss. The problem really is not a hallucination of one point. The problem is the cascading effect of it and how you build up on top of it is one mistake after another mistake after another mistake. You know, they say the Titanic did not sink due to an iceberg. It's one mistake after another mistake after another mistake. The iceberg is the last straw that broke the camel's back. There were multiple mistakes before this.
For the iceberg.
It's the same thing when it comes to this LLM. It's not just one mistake. You know, like, of course, it comes into a mistake. You build up your whole plan based on that mistake, and then you build up your action on that mistake, and then it cascades through. I genuinely do not believe LLMs are, you know, production ready for critical production apps as of now.
Yeah. And so what do you think they should be used at?
They should be used for, you know, knowledge. I can't survive without ChatGPT. You ask it a question, you get feedback, you get some kind of, you know, response. It pushes you. It's like a wise old guy sitting next to you. He's not going to do the programming for you. He's not going to do the, you know, the action plan for you. But you can talk and you can get feedback. And based on that, you know, you can improve your thoughts. You can do different things. It has been engineers at recommending new things.
Now, you are meeting with Google DeepMind team and collaborating currently with the UFT Research, that's University of Toronto Research, on this. What is the actual technical approach here? Is the training data a problem, fine-tuning problem, reinforcement problem, or something else entirely?
It's an algorithmic problem. We are struggling to get the right algorithms. I'm sure, you know, Google has a lot of algorithms hidden away, stashed away. We use something known as a vector graph, and then we're trying to get what is the closest vector to the vector that we are providing. So it's more of a technical problem. So it's not the data. We have one of the largest data in the world for, you know, e-commerce, for the e-commerce performance. But when it comes to algorithms, that's where, you know, we are struggling. We are still a bootstrap startup. Our ML team is still tiny. It's just, you know, four people working on the machine learning. So a lot of the struggles is the technical know-how.
And is there a knowledge sharing here between what you've learned on the business side and what academia has discovered on their side? Because some stuff on the academia side probably don't have access to, you do, and vice versa. Is there cross-pollinization happening here?
I haven't looked into it, but what we do is we just keep on asking ChatGPT, is there any current scientific research based on this particular subject? And ChatGPT pulls it up. But our machine learning team also keeps on lookout. But the other way around is most of the academia is created by practical teams. So for example, a lot of the bid forecasting algorithms was created by Alibaba when they were launching their own e-commerce sites. So academia, yep. And you know, the companies are very, very closely related. Everything at academia is practical, you know, companies that launch their own papers, scientific papers.
Yeah. Now, I want to bring this right to my audience here in the world that I live in, which is the language and communication world. Hallucination in AI translation and multilingual content is one of the biggest trust blockers currently in using AI in the language service industry right now, because not everything is automated in the language industry. Most of it's still being used. They use models to assist the human. From your research, is hallucination a problem fundamentally the same, whether you are talking about numbers, words, or any other context? Or is it different animals altogether?
Can you rephrase that question, please?
So I'm just trying to understand, is hallucination an e-commerce problem, or does it apply to other sectors, like the language, legal, any other?
Hallucination is a common problem across LLM, right? It's across spaces, across business, across industries, everywhere. The ability of LLM to conjure up things that is not based on reality. And it is specifically, hurtful for legal, for finance, because it hallucinates number. It's wherever there is, you require 100% accuracy, faithfulness of data. The more you depend on faithful data, the more you will get hurt because of the hallucination. When it comes to educational materials, or you're creating, long blogs, long blog posts, there's a bit of a hallucination. It's okay. It's just for general information. But when you depend on legal and the numbers need to be straight, you depend on finance and the numbers need to be exact, that's where you're going to get really hurt due to this hallucination effect.
Now, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Because we're always talking about hallucination on the channel in a variety of ways. There are many people using different techniques for it. Some people building sort of guardrail around the context, if you will. They call it context rotting, against context rotting. Yeah. And so trying to figure this problem out. And I do run an AI exchange networking event that happens on a Friday mornings at 9 a.m. And, you and your team are welcome to attend if that's of an interest to you. We've got various experts from around the world. They join and we talk about the latest in technology, what people are seeing on their side and what problems are they solving, some of the use cases that they're seeing. It's good. It's good community. It's about 75 people in it. Normally about 20, 25 people show up to the meeting. And it's always something new, I guess, because of the breadth of this thing. So you're welcome to join if you want.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Now, building a little bit on this one, and one of the statements as I read is you're building the infrastructure for ASI. What does that actually mean?
One of the biggest thing, what I talk about is hallucination. And the second part is our human brain is way more complex than the current LLMs. And how we think about is in layers. So we take the abstract knowledge first, and then we keep on building the higher and higher, knowledge around it. But LLMs are one-dimensional, and they don't have the concept of time. They don't have the concept of what is the cost for a wrong answer. And they don't question what you tell them, what you trained on. So if they have been trained, if you take a blank LLM, and if you train it that the sun is green for, a million iterations, it looks at the sun, it sees it's yellow, it will say, no, it's wrong, the sun is green. It cannot, it cannot go against the training data. And it also doesn't think in layers. And what we are thinking is we need to completely revamp this. We need to completely revamp this transformer model. We need to completely revamp this LLM model. We need to think in terms of layer. Build out an abstract, put a layer on top of it, put an abstract layer on top of it. Question everything. Every single sentence, every single fact has to be questioned. Is this true? Branch off from that. Chain of thoughts is a similar way in some ways. It helps you some of it, but it has to be done in a latent space, not once everything has been decided. That's a waste of energy. That's a waste of time. So what we're doing is we're building out some kind of a reinforcement learning that mm-hmm. can start from the very scratch, give you the information that you talk about, build out an abstract, and then build out the whole knowledge graph based on that.
And, I had a couple of podcasts here done on the, some people are modeling, creating models around the human cognitive remembering or memory, I should say. And they're trying to mimic how the human brain function into a model.
Yeah.
And there's some research being done on this one. Happy to introduce you to some of the researchers. Actually, my nephew works for, he teaches at the University of Dalhousie. He's a professor of mathematics and physics at the University of Dalhousie, and he works for Bombardier as well. So if that's of an, he joins me on the AI exchange, if that's of an interest to you. So it's pretty interesting. And there's another researcher who is working on cognitive modeling right now for AI. He's part of the group as well. Yeah. He's based in Belgium. and he comes into the conversation. He's a pretty interesting individual too. Those two individuals could be a worth a discussion or a side conversation with them. They'd be helpful. They'd be helpful here.
I would love to have a chat with them.
The other thing too is, how does hallucination work feed into ASI roadmap, in your opinion?
I believe it's one It's a very important thing to have. But if you look at, you know, if you go into the philosophical aspect of it, brains also hallucinate a lot. We hallucinate a lot as well. Yeah.
We call it dementia.
Even if you're not dementia, you know, like even if it's not dementia, we hallucinate a lot. We see what we, you know, like there's a famous expression that says we see the world for what we are, not for what it is.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely correct.
So our brain, you know, like it takes a lot of processing power to see everything. So our brain blocks off that what we don't need, and then it predicts what it is going to be. And then your brain sees that prediction. You don't see the reality. You see the prediction. So there is a lot of hallucination in the human brain as well. The logic.
But there's a lot of ways you can fool a human brain. And I've done a couple of podcasts on the human brain being the attack surface of the next cyber attack. You don't need to break systems anymore. All you need to do is convince a human brain that this is real. And they take action, and you all of a sudden, you're in the system. You already hacked it.
They used to call us, you know, social hacking. Which has been for ages, the weakest link in any, you know, network is the human person that, you know, you can always convince them. And some of them are very convincing. But, excuse me, coming to the point, humans also hallucinate a lot. And we still consider ourselves intelligent, you know, even if you don't consider dementia, we still hallucinate a lot. We still, you know, see for what we are, not what is the reality. There's a lot of going on in the brain. Hallucination is, we don't hallucinate as much as LLM. And if I give you some statistics, like this is my spend, this is my sales, you would not hallucinate it. You know, that is important. So you place emphasis on what things are important and you do not hallucinate on that. But LLMs do not know what is important and what is not important. If you give them a paragraph text, they take absolutely every word at, you know, at face value. And they put equal emphasis on all of it. They do not question anything. They put equal emphasis on everything. They do not know some things are more important than the other. And that is what we have to solve. So only ASI can in a way solve, you know, the hallucination. It is as we go towards more and more super intelligence, that is the way to solve the ASI.
So, you know, I was listening this morning to the news and then they were talking about ASI and, you know, a few experts were on the panel. This panel was Elon Musk was on it as well. But I want to get your opinion on this. When you say ASI, you mean intelligence that surpasses, and this is just for the audience, intelligence that surpasses a human capability across all domains. Most serious researchers say they were at least a decade away from that. Yes. But this morning, everybody was talking about 2027. I have no idea. Where do you put the timeline right now in your mind from an ASI perspective?
All I can say is if anyone gives you a time, they're lying. No one knows the time.
Nobody knows the time.
Nobody even knows if you'll get that.
What's missing?
What is missing? The fact that we don't know what we are. The fact that we don't even know what is intelligence. The fact that we can't define intelligence. We can probably get really super high, you know, intelligent, of course, chess machines. We can have, you know, like a super intelligent driving cars. But to define intelligence and to beat humans when we can't even define ourselves is a very precarious thing. I can't say 2026. I can't say 2027. I can't say 2020. The answer is, I honestly don't know. And I think people who say they know, they themselves don't know.
What's the status on AGI and singularity? Do you know?
Well, that again is very debatable, right?
Debatable too?
Yeah, that's debatable too. I know for sure that is I'm confident of. That is not the transformers that will get us there. Some other technology will get us there. But even if you think of some other, you know, technology. And, you know, I always say the best way to predict the future is to create it. So we are, you know, ourselves throwing our hat in the ring and we are trying to work on this AGI, ASI thing. And we hope, you know, we can take a moonshot at this. But the more you read into the human mind, the more you realize that we ourselves don't know what we are. You know, like we don't know what is consciousness. We don't know what is intelligence. We don't even know why we are sentient. And are animals sentient? Are plants sentient? Does a person who has dementia and who does not know how to speak, is he conscious? If he is, then why is he conscious without intelligence? And sometimes, you know, when you wake up, there are people that have lucid dreams. Their consciousness is awake, but their body is shut down and their intelligence is shut down. How come they have consciousness, but their intelligence is zero? So that's how, you know, you have a sleep paralysis. Your prefrontal cortex is awake, you know, but your body is all shut down. So your consciousness is awake, but your logic is down. There are things that, you know, we don't know. There are things we don't know, we don't know. So I say impossible to predict anything.
You know, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, it's hard to tell where we are. And I'm assuming there are two any technology that we're using right now, there are two versions of it, at least two versions of it. The consumer-facing version that we're all using and we're all trying to deal with. And there's the laboratory version, which probably, I would assume, in some companies, way surpasses the consumer-based version. Because it's built for purpose. Built for purpose versus built for general use, which brings me to one of the questions I had for you is most owners, most technology projects out there are using out-of-the-box models that they're out there, ChatGPT, Anthropic, etc. You decided to build your own, yeah, obviously, for, just purpose-built for your own needs. Plus, probably it would be more cost effective. Instead of you paying tokens, you probably don't have to. I don't know how a purpose built your own ML would work. Do you still have to pay anybody other than where are you running the model? Is it on AWS or whatever? So you're probably paying like storage instead of tokens. Am I correct?
Yeah, we have our own CPU. We have our own data warehouse. We have our own GPU. But we pay the electricity bill. It's still minimal, but so far our model is very tiny compared to the commercial models. We use the Chinese models, Alibaba Cloud Command and DeepSeek. That's far cheaper than OpenAI or Cloud.
And is it good enough for what you do? Because I hear people have like different takes on different models, right? It's like running for political office. You know, some people are preferring one model versus another model. Some people will swear by one versus another. But at the end of the day, is for what you need, is it satisfying the business that you're in?
Absolutely. 100% agreed. Does it satisfy what you're, what you're planning to do?
And is that working for you? Like DeepSeek right now? Yeah. Because, in my world, like in the language world, it's well known, Amazon is the world's largest multilingual platform in the world. They translate everything. In fact, many companies that they're listening to this podcast, they deal with Amazon to translate for Amazon their content in a variety of ways, using artificial intelligence, using human, in many ways, actually, depending on which content we're talking about. Not all content are treated equally. In your assessment, from managing advertisements for sellers, obviously, do you get involved in creating these advertisements, or they create it and you just be in the in between the person who's using it and the person who's creating it?
Both. So we create the ads for the user. We even create the creatives. It depends on what plan the user is.
How big is your company? How many people you have?
We have around 26. I did the count in the morning. We have 26 employees.
You did the count in the morning. I love that. And are they located? You mentioned they're located everywhere, right? So you got like various locations?
Yeah, they're located in 7 countries.
So, one would assume like you're operating in multi-markets, and multi-markets meaning you're creating things in multi-language, multi-domains, and people are using, as you mentioned earlier, AI for that. And seems to be good enough from what you're saying.
Yeah, it's pretty good enough, yeah. We use actually multiple models. We use Claude, we use Codex, we use Qwen, we use DeepSeek. But Qwen and DeepSeek is more for the API calls. For the humans to use, the devs prefer Claude for some reason, and the rest of the team prefers ChatGPT.
As a language industry, again, for the language industry audience, as we are going through a crossroad right now, we're at a crossroad. The MT, we call it machine translation quality, is good enough for many use cases, but the trust is still an issue. There's trust issue in the models, in the technology, etc. So you've got this consumer base saying in your case, in the Amazon case, it's good enough. I understand what your advertisement is saying. That's fine. And you've got, I want to use the expression of the Picasso here, wants to paint the Mona Lisa to make sure that the translation is perfect. The balance is in between. And again, every use case is different. Every use case could be, it's good enough. I understand what you're saying. May not be perfect, but I got the message. Thank you very much. And I'm either going to click to buy or move on. It's as simple as that, especially when you're dealing with retail. It's very cost conscious, business. It's like a fraction of a cent here and there could make a difference.
Yeah, I don't think we have any problem with the translation. We never had any complaint from anyone. And I do speak a couple of languages and I took a look at it. And it does look like some human wrote it. It doesn't look like some...
The models are improving. A few years ago, you put it through a model, probably you can detect there's issues. I speak 3-4 languages too. And it's just like right now, I use AI for a few things and seems to be doing well. I don't see an issue.
For sure. You know, interesting thing about LLMs and transformer is if you ask it a question in English and if you ask it a question in French, it has completely different thinking. But if you ask a human a question in English and the same question in French, it's the same intelligence behind it. But machines don't have the same. That's a big problem that we're trying to solve as well. Regardless of the language, you should think the same.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is when we talk about localization, right?
Yeah.
Translation is a direct translation from one language to another. You know, imagine using a dictionary to translate something. Localization is to actually localize it to a specific market. And be cognizant and be aware what is allowed in this particular market, what is not allowed in this particular market, right? So there are words you can say, there are words you can offend people, there are words that probably are not kosher to be used within particular demographic than you would normally use in other demographics. So that becomes a little sensitive, but AI seems to be catching on with that stuff. So even with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I just want to move a little bit to the looking forward kind of a segment here as we near the end of our conversation. You've made a recommendation for Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Can you talk a little bit about that recommendation and why do you like that book?
It has nothing to do with AI. And in some ways, it has been some kind of an influential thinking. And it also influenced me to start my business because most of my friends, you know, like now, I mean, a lot of the friends are business owners. But growing up, my entire clique, my entire, you know, friendship group was made of friends whose parents worked in 9-to-5 jobs, you know, and the goal installed in us was find a nice job, settle down, you know, buy a house. And that's what, you know, the middle class aspires to. But I read this and it struck with me that rich people don't think of the 9-to-5 job. They like own a business, be your own boss, you know, something that our parents, you know, like my parents never instilled in me. And there's a huge difference in mentality between, you know, the rich people and the not so rich people. And this mentality is what makes or breaks or gives you the freedom. And this also pushed me to think into like, I can have my own business. I can do my own business. So while the book might seem cliched, I think it did in effect, you know, change my mentality to have a business.
And you're happier now.
Yes, definitely. I don't have a, you know, a time that I can work for. I can, you know, I can do whatever I want. You know, I have my own freedom and I'm happy with the employees. The ML team, you know, the tech team, I absolutely love, you know, working with them, talking with them, interacting with them. It's my freedom to do what I want. And I'm growing as well. I'm very excited about the future. I'm very excited about the HAL Zero. I'm very excited about, you know, throwing my hat in the ring for artificial super intelligence and being audacious enough that, you know, like you could have billions of dollars in funding for OpenAI and we could be, you know, completely shoestring budget, but we'll take a stab at it and see, you know, who wins.
Absolutely. You got to put your hat and then your name in the hat.
Yeah.
When you look 5 years from now, and you have like a very specific sense of where AI is going, what is the thing that most founders and executives are underestimating about what's coming?
I think a lot of them have underinvested their employees into AI. They are too busy vibe coding. They're too busy creating apps. I think what you need to do is the distribution is going to make a lot of difference. How are you going to distribute? How are you going to, you know, publicize? How are you going to educate the public? And more importantly, are your employees, you know, well-versed with the AI, you know, paradigm? Do they use AI sufficiently? It's like a difference between, you know, when we went from the horse to the cars and the employees are still riding the horses. It's like, teach them a car, get them a license, educate them about petrol. It's a new world, you know, like it's a completely different world. The kids nowadays start off with you know, if I ask my nephew or niece, you know, like, did you Google that? And they don't know what is Google. And that was when the first shock hit me that they don't know what is Google. Everything is on ChatGPT. And I feel like old because Google was a novelty. And now Google is like, they're like, what is Google?
Yeah, I hardly go to Google anymore. I just can't believe it. I made the switch. It was so natural for me. It wasn't so hard to make the switch, though.
Yeah, there you go. And the kids, you know, when they grow up nowadays, I don't think anyone knows what is Google to them. It's everything is like a chat. You know, as they say, chat. We can just ask chat.
Now, you're building this AI infrastructure, I guess, on a, you mentioned earlier, on shoestring budget. What I was going to say is away from like VC hype machine in San Francisco, like tech people would.
Yeah.
Is that an advantage or a disadvantage? Or does it matter?
It's a disadvantage for sure. You know, like if a VC came to me and said, you know, like, I'll give you this much amount of money, would you be happy? It's like, for sure. You know, like, I would jump on it. But the skill set required to get to a VC to talk to them and the time required is significant enough if you're not connected and if you're not in the Bay Area. That's why I plan to go to the Bay Area to do a bit of a road trip and then, you know,
Yeah, I was there 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you were there? How was the...
I had a conference to attend. It was hosted by Adobe. I was at the Adobe head office, and there was people there from Google, from, you know, the brands that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
They were all there. It's just like a collection of who's who in the Bay Area, really. All the tech people were there, like, from everybody. And it wasn't that big of a conference. It wasn't like thousands. It was like more like 150, which is, the room is very manageable. You probably, by the end of the evening, you can talk to everybody. I posted about it on LinkedIn. It was pretty interesting. And it happens once a year if you want to be part of that conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm happy to take a look and see.
Yeah.
I've got to go to the Bay Area maybe in a couple of weeks. Just see, check it out, what's going on, you know, talk to some VCs and see. It's a huge disadvantage to build out with a UEC because, one, you don't have the money, and two,
yep,
you don't have the connections and the knowledge.
You're not the only one facing that, you know. I did a podcast with somebody the other day, a young man out of Montreal.
Yeah.
He had the idea of, you know, like the Shark Tank, when you go in and you give your idea to people and people invest in it if they like it.
Yeah.
So, well, not everybody's going to be in front of Shark Tanks. I mean, not everybody's got to get that opportunity. So how do I do that? So at the age of 18, he quit high school and he built his own first app.
Yeah.
And he built it with the idea that he called it Fish Tank instead of Shark Tank, Fish Tank.
Yeah.
So he built it on a TikTok platform, where you have an idea, you put it in a series of videos, and you attract VCs through that. I said, did you get any money? He said, I got my first one. It was like $10 million. And I said, are you kidding? He said, no, I'm not kidding. And I said, give me the name. He gave me the name. So I connected with the individual on LinkedIn, and he validated. So there are people trying to solve that VC money. And I interviewed somebody like just before you. This guy is in the UK as well. Not in Canada, and they needed to fund a particular AI initiative.
Yeah.
They put it on a crowdfunding platform,
yeah,
and they got £500,000 pounds sterling in like no time.
Crowdfunding is much harder than VC funding.
And they got like over 150 investors for that.
It depends on what your platform does as well.
Yeah. They have this In Europe, they have this thing called, what is it, Invest Europe or something? I can't remember the name of the platform that allows you for these types of initiatives, I guess.
I see.
All right. Any last comments before we terminate? This is a great conversation, by the way. I appreciate it.
Post-AI society is going to be very different. And I think we should be more optimistic about it rather than pessimistic. And we need to make sure that we are well prepared for it, because the world is going to change when we can't even value human intelligence or even human effort. A lot of the jobs are going to be redundant, which means we need to have some kind of a UBI in place. This is very critical that we have a ideal, nice world, fair world, and AI can help us reach that.
Absolutely. And I do hope that in the process of creating a super intelligence or intelligence in general,
yeah,
that we do not make a human dumber. I feel like, you know, if we are going to make super intelligence, that we help human become more, even more intelligent, then not become docile or complacent or relying on another piece of hardware or software to do the work that we're supposed to be doing that trains our brain to the future. You know, everybody I interviewed, I asked about their experiences, your experiences, my experiences, and the experience of millions of others led us to where we are right now. If we eliminate all this and we just put it on a platform and says, you want something, go to the platform, I'm not sure how human will be down the road. This is the question mark. How do we be next generation or two generation down the road without the experiences that we're living right now, or we lived already?
Yeah, for sure. I remember a small anecdote, you know, from decades ago during my biology class. Our biology teacher was explaining evolution and said that in a 100 or 150 years, humans will have head twice the big and body, you know, half as small, because we're thinking more and more and we're not doing physical activity. And now that I think of it, it's the opposite. We're going to be more into physical activity and thinking less. So our head is going to shrink, our body is going to become bigger. You can't predict the future. Even someone as intelligent as my biology teacher, who I really respected and who was very intelligent,
yeah,
she was opposite. So when people say AGI is around the corner, AI is around the corner, it's just, you know, bullshit. It's not
Nobody knows. Nobody knows, Ganesh. Nobody knows.
Yeah. Nobody, absolutely.
I really want to thank you for today. Thanks for having the time with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Robin.
Any other comments or questions that you'd like to address?
I think that's about it. We talked a fair bit and we covered almost all the subject.
Hopefully we've covered all the areas you wanted to cover.
Yep, definitely. That's a philosophical aspect, but it's very different from, you know, what we usually talk about.
Anytime you want to come back, you're welcome to the channel. We'd love to have you for an update as things move along with HAL Zero. We'd love to get you back on as you launch the application, see how it's going. Reach out to me anytime you like, and we'll book you on the podcast.
Perfect. Thank you, Robin.
Ganesh, I want to thank you so much. It's been a genuinely fascinating conversation. You know, we've covered pretty much everything from automating $1 billion revenue on Amazon by your suppliers, by your customers' ads, to trying to solve hallucination at the foundation layer of AI, to thinking seriously about the infrastructure of artificial intelligence or super intelligence. You are building right now at a scale people only talk about. Love to stay in touch with you because this is very, very important. This is a singular initiative versus a Grok or ChatGPT thinking about it. If, you know, we're heading in the right direction, if this now, the building, the thinking, the engineering is being democratized to a point where small, young, you know, upcoming entrepreneurs are thinking in the same long ways that the large organization are thinking about it. So proud of you. Thank you for doing the work you do. And thank you for bringing to the localization Fireside Chat community, your ideas, your thoughts, your conversation. And before I will let you go tell our listeners, the best way to connect with you right now is on LinkedIn, right? And you and I are connected right now, Ganesh. So Ganesh Krishnan, and he's connected with me on LinkedIn. Everybody, if anybody wants to hook up or talk to Ganesh, reach out to me if you can't find him, and I will be happy to facilitate an introduction. I really appreciate your time, everybody. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Thanks for coming on our podcast channel. Thanks for listening in. And if you're reading our blog post where we summarize all these conversations on our blog post with 2-3 minute read, thanks for subscribing. And I thank you so much for joining me on episode 219. I will see you at the next episode recording. I'll talk to you later. Thanks, everybody.